and hard. We know you tried to sell us out, you and your posse. She broke into a low chuckle. That was a necessary tactical maneuver. I never had any intention. Don't add another lie to your sins. I could have you removed from this habitat and sent back to your prison cell in Vienna with just a single call back to Amsterdam. Eberle bit back the reply he wanted to make. They had reached the lakeside recreation area, where hundreds of chairs had been set in neat rows facing the bandshell stage. A few dozen people were already seated there. Professor Wilmot sat alone up on the stage, looking somewhere between weary and bored. The band musicians that were lounging off at one side of the stage picked up their instruments and arranged themselves into a ragged semblance of order. Eberle stopped at the edge of the last row of mostly empty chairs. Everything was as he had planned it. This was the moment he had worked for ever since that meeting in Schönbrunn prison. He had planned out every detail of this inauguration ceremony. The only thing he could not control was the yawning indifference of the habitat's people, that and Morgenthau's hardening attitude toward him. All the details are perfect, Eberle said to himself, but the day is an utter failure. Turning to Morgenthau, he said, "You'll have to walk three paces behind me." "Of course," she said with a knowing smile. "I know how to play the role of the subservient woman." Eberle took a deep breath. "It's going to be like this forever," he realized. "She's going to make my life a hell on wheels." Outwardly, though, he appeared to smile and pull himself up to his full height. He hesitated at the last row of chairs until he caught the band leader's eye. With a nod, Eberle started marching down the central aisle between the empty chairs. Halfway between his second and third steps, the band broke into a half-hearted rendition of "Hail to the Chief."
Holly watched the inaugural ceremony from her own apartment, deeply uncertain about what her future had in store. Malcolm tried to go against Kananga and got nowhere. What will he do once he's officially installed in office? What will Kananga do? Holly decided she couldn't wait for them to make up their minds. She grabbed a few clothes, stuffed them into a tote bag, and headed for the door of her apartment. "I'd better be where they can't find me," she told herself, "until I know what they're really gonna do." Her phone buzzed. She put the bag down and pulled out the handheld. Raul Tavallera's face appeared on the tiny screen. He looked bone-weary, disheveled. "Holly, you okay?" "I'm fine, Raul," she replied, nodding. "But I can't really talk with you now. I'm worried about you." Holly didn't know what to say. She felt genuinely touched. "Raul, you didn't have to worry about me. I can take care of myself." "Against that Kananga guy and his goons?" She hesitated. "You shouldn't get yourself involved in this, Raul. You could get into deep trouble." Even in the minuscule screen, she could see the stubborn set of his jaw. "If you're in trouble, I want to help." How to get rid of him without hurting his feelings? Holly blurted, "Raul, you're a really special guy, but I've got to run now. See you later." She clicked the phone off, tucked it back into her tote, picked up the bag, and left her apartment. "I don't want to hurt him," she told herself. "He's too nifty to get himself tangled up in this mess." There were only two security people following her as she walked down the empty path, a chunky-looking guy and a slim woman who was either Hispanic or Oriental. It was hard for Holly to tell which at the distance from which they followed her. Both wore black tunics and slacks, which made them stand out against the village's white buildings like inkblots on a field of snow. She grinned to herself. "I'll lose those two clowns as soon as I pop down into the tunnels." She never noticed the third security agent moving far ahead of her, but he tracked her quite clearly. Every item of Holly's clothes had been sprayed with a monomolecular odorant that allowed the agent to track her like a bloodhound.
"You're missing the inauguration," Gaeta said. Cardenas shrugged. "So I miss it." Gaeta's massive armored suit stood like a grotesque statue in the middle of the workshop floor. The chamber hummed with the background buzz of electrical equipment and the quiet intensity of specialists going about their jobs. Fritz and two of his technicians were using the overhead crane to slowly lower the bulbous suit to a horizontal position and place it on its 8-wheel transport dolly. It looked to Cardenas like lowering a statue. A third technician had crawled inside the suit. Cardenas could see his sandy brown mop of hair through the open hatch in its back. Off at a console against the workshop wall, Nadia Wonderly was tracing the trajectory of the ice-covered asteroid that was making its last approach to the main ring before falling into orbit around Saturn. Berkowitz shuttled nervously from one to another, recording everything with his handycam. Gaeta walked slowly to the diagnostic console and bent over it to study rows of steady green lights intently. "He's really trying to get away from me," Cardenas said to herself. "I shouldn't be here. I shouldn't be distracting him now. I should leave him to focus completely on his job." Yet she stayed, shuffling uneasily, uncertainly, as the men around her went through their final tasks before wheeling the suit down to the airlock, where they would stow it aboard the shuttlecraft that would take Manny to the rings. As Gaeta watched them gently lowering the suit, Cardenas realized that the contraption will be his home for the next 2 days. He'll have to live inside it, work inside it, maybe die inside it. "Stop it," she commanded herself. "No blubbering. He's got enough to worry about without you crying all over him." It took an enormous effort of will, but finally Cardenas heard herself say, "Manny, I'd better get back to my apartment. I..." She stopped, then touched his strong, muscular shoulder and kissed him lightly on the lips. "I'll see you when you get back," she said. He nodded, his face deadly serious. "In 2 days." "Good luck," she said, barely able to move her hand from his shoulder. "Nothing to worry about," he said, making a smile for her. "This is going to be a walk in the park." "Good luck," she repeated, then abruptly turned away from him and started walking toward the workshop door. Her mind kept churning. "He'll be all right. He's done more dangerous stunts than this. He knows what he's doing. Fritz won't let him take any unnecessary chances. He'll be back in 2 days. In 2 days, it'll be all over, and he'll be safe." "Yes," said a voice in her mind, "and then he'll leave the habitat, go back to Earth, leave you for good."
"Therefore," Professor Wilmot was saying, "in accordance with this community's principles of organization, I declare the new constitution to be the deciding law of this habitat. I further declare that you, Malcolm Eberly, having been duly elected by free vote of the population, are now officially the chief administrator of this habitat." The few hundred people scattered among the chairs spread across the grass rose to their feet and applauded. The band broke into "Happy Days Are Here Again." Wilmot gripped Eberly's hand limply and mumbled, "Congratulations, I suppose." Eberly grasped the podium's edges and looked out at the sparse audience. There sat Morgenthau in the front row, eyeing him like an elementary school teacher waiting for her pupil to recite the speech she had forced him to write. Kananga and Viborg sat behind her. Eberly had composed an inauguration speech, liberally cribbed from the words of Churchill, Kennedy, both Roosevelts, and Shakespeare. He looked down at the opening lines in the podium's display screen. With a shake of his head that was visible to everyone in the audience, he looked up again and said, "This is no time for fancy speeches. We have arrived safely at our destination. Let those who are believers thank God. Let all of us understand that tomorrow our real work begins. I intend to file a petition with the world government asking them to recognize us as a separate and independent nation, just as Selene and Ceres have been recognized." There was a moment of surprised silence. Then everyone jumped to their feet and applauded lustily. Everyone except Morgenthau, Kananga, and Viborg.
Launch. Raul Tavalera watched the orbital insertion and Eberly's inauguration from his apartment.